Hi, I'm Rhonda Began, one of the executive leadership coaches at Living Wholehearted. And I love what I do as a coach, especially in our cohort setting. That's why I'm excited to tell you that we are starting a 2-year women's executive leadership cohort in April of this year. And I don't want you to miss out. You might think as a leader, there's no way I can take 2 years to do anything. But we designed our cohort specifically to be doable for the high-level leader. Through one-on-one coaching that is easy to schedule, to once-a-month virtual group coaching, and then 4 amazing retreats at our Living Wholehearted Lodge and Retreat in beautiful Sherwood, Oregon, in the heart of wine country. We will look at who you are and how your story matters. We'll look at how you're wired and why it's important to be who you are. And then we'll look at how you have the potential to impact not just your leadership, but your family, your community, and your world. Hope you join us.
So finding rest when there is so much to do and so many people relying on you. Maybe you're here because you are trying to prevent burnout, or you are in the dead center of burnout. You want to work hard, but you want to learn how to rest. This podcast, this episode today is for you with our guest, Dr. Sandra Dalton Smith. It's so good to have you.
It is my pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, Dr. Sandra Dalton Smith is an international well-being thought leader, featured in numerous media outlets, including MSNBC, Women's Day, Fox, Psychology Today, and TED.com. She's the author of numerous books, including her bestseller, Sacred Rest, Recover Your Life, Renew Your Energy, Restore Your Sanity. Yes, many of our leaders need to restore sanity, and we certainly experience this at times as well. Yeah. Dr. Sandra, so glad to have you. Welcome again. Mm.
Thank you.
Okay, so before we dive in, tell us a little bit about your own journey and trying to find rest. You know, we love vulnerability as wholehearted leaders. We want to be honest about our own humanity. So we'd love to hear maybe what preempted this book in your own story.
Yes, kids preempted the book. So I was handling it all pretty well until I had 2 sons very close in age together. 21 months apart. And so I had 2 toddlers under the age of 2 and working full time as an internal medicine physician in clinical practice, which meant I saw people in the emergency room in the ICU. And then I went over to my clinical office. So I was working just a ridiculous number of hours with no system in place really on how to not burn out. And so I don't think I really had an option but to get to the end of myself, and just found myself one day after picking them up from school, just like looking around thinking, okay, God, I feel like I'm in your will. I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So why does this feel so horrible? Why am I have no joy, no peace? I've prayed for these children for a very long time, and I don't even have the energy to enjoy them. And I knew that just wasn't his best. So that's where the journey started.
So real. And yeah. Everyone's like, yes, amen, amen. I'm there. And those that maybe don't have kids yet, but are busting their tail in their high-level C-suite leadership role somewhere can resonate at some level.
Yeah, it's also just kind of telling too. Thanks for that. You know, you're at the height of your career in medicine. You're in healthcare, and surprise, surprise, you feel like you're the patient in many ways. Mm-hmm. Is kind of what I could translate what you just.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that was the problem. It's like medicine taught me how to push through fatigue and how to keep churning and keep going and grind it out, so to speak. But it did not show, and it still doesn't really give a system in place for how to be sustainable in leadership. And I think that is the missing link for a lot of leaders. You know, you can sometimes just on passion alone push through stuff.
Yeah.
But there has to be a level of sustainability to be able to do it long term and to do it well.
That's so good, Dr. Sandra. You know, we talk a lot about healthy leadership. One big overarching principle for us is that we are using others less to get our needs met in unhealthy ways. Like that would be a barometer of health. I want to hear a little bit about your types of rest that you've identified. 7 types of rest. Kind of walk us through what those look like. Man, this is probably going to sound like some sort of healing balm to people's ears, especially when they're like, what happened? How did I land here? So speak to us about that.
Yeah. So, well, the 7 types include physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, social, sensory, and creative, with the physical having two components to it, the active component and the passive, which all of us know about, which is sleeping. And really the big part of that is just understanding that rest and sleep are not the same thing. Sleep is a component of resting, but it's not the end all be all of rest. And I feel like oftentimes we use those words interchangeably. And in doing so, we really downgrade what rest can be in our lives, and we isolate it just to those nighttime hours.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'd like to, maybe pick at that for a little bit more. What separate that for folks? How is rest different from, sleep? Because I'd ask my daughters when they wake up, two teenage daughters, and teens need more sleep than anybody. How'd you sleep last night? And they're like, no, not good. We're talking about rest is what I'm really trying to get at. But what's the difference there?
Yeah, well, you bring up an excellent point. A lot of us now have our little devices on our arms, whether it's your finger now, whether it's a Fitbit or an Oura Ring or whatever it is that you're wearing. A lot of these devices now will let you know some idea of the quality of your sleep. And a big part of the issue that we're finding when people don't have restorative sleep or they don't feel like their sleep was effective is that the sleep did not get into a deeper level of non-REM sleep. So I won't go too deep into all of that, but we have REM, we have non-REM, and even within non-REM, we have different levels. And so at the level 3 and 4 of non-REM sleep, the deeper levels of non-REM, that is where most people start feeling that their sleep was restorative. Well, the problem is a lot of us don't get deep sleep. We get a lot of very light sleep. So we wake up really quickly. Any kind of noise or sound brings us out of the sleep, and we don't get those deeper levels of sleep. Well, I feel like a big part of that is because we are not well rested. If your mind is overactive and you go to bed and you're thinking all the thoughts and you can't clear your head space, it's very difficult to get to a deeper level of sleep because you are battling with the mental rest deficit that's keeping you from going into deep sleep. Similarly, if your body's tight and tense and every time you turn over, you're trying to find the one right spot on the pillow because your body is so tense from sitting, at a desk all day, that's going to keep you out of deep sleep. So sleep and rest have a relationship, but they are not the same thing.
Mm. It's so good. And it I'm in the mental health side of things. And so often we're trying to address the pre-sleep routines and saying, okay, what's happening in the hour, 2 hours before bed? So speak to that a little bit, even just practically for leaders, because we do. We hit the pillow hard and then we get back up and we start it all over again. And so what might be some really practical ways to start thinking about the pre so that you're not racing in your mind or you're preparing your body for the bed?
So that brings up two parts of it. I feel, when I talk about the types of rest, I divided up the things that go on in our brain quite severely. In other words, there's mental rest, there's emotional rest, and there's sensory rest, and all of those go through your nervous system, but that's actually what goes throughout our entire body as well. And so when we think about the mental rest aspect of it, that's kind of what you describe. What someone lays down, they're thinking all the thoughts, they're going through their to-do list, they're recounting, conversations they had, all of those types of things. A pre-sleep activity or a pre-bedtime activity could be something like a brain dump, where instead of just allowing the rumination process to continue, to actually have a notepad or something where you're jotting down whatever that is you're ruminating over so that your brain doesn't continue to focus on that ruminating thought. Because a big part of rumination is memorization. And so when you jot it down, it kind of gives the brain permission to, oh, okay, it's safe. Let me release it and move on to whatever the next thing is. The other part of that is sensory. I mentioned, unfortunately, a lot of us spend quite a bit of energy in sensory-rich environments, whether it's our phone, our computers, whatever, TV, all the things that we have to keep the noise and all the bells and whistles and lights going to make sure that we are downgrading some of the sensory input before we go to bed. Our circadian system likes darkness to go to sleep, and so the more you stay in light, the more it triggers your brain to thinking it's daytime hours. So starting to think about that, even just with turning down like the light on your computer and having, these are things you can automate so that at 5 o'clock, your computer kind of goes to a dark mode, or your house may have some automation within it where you dim lights at a certain period of time. And just being mindful of that, that anything that can kind of ease the body into a normal circadian pattern can help add to that sleep a benefit. And then the other aspect of that was you mentioned about emotions and that part of it. If you're lying down at bed and what you're ruminating over isn't like your to-do list, but you're ruminating over feelings, thoughts, emotions, chances are there's a bit of an emotional rest deficit there, meaning that you don't feel like you had any other place to process those emotions. So making space within your life, whether it's with a person, your significant other or trusted friend or therapist, counselor, whoever, or if it's a journal where you're journaling out whatever that thought process, that emotional process you're needing to work through so that you're not taking that into your sleeping hours.
That's so good. And actually, just last night, I've been having some dreams and feeling a little restless about some things. And that's exactly where I went. I went, oh, I haven't made room in my days to process. So I told Jeff, I said, in the next 2 weeks, I just need some time to verbalize with you. I'm doing some journaling. I'm talking with some friends, but I think I need to process with you. So I said that even this morning. But that something I've learned over the years as well and have helped a lot of clients. So it is something to really be thoughtful about. It didn't have to be in that day, but just starting to make room for it. Again, kind of like the brain dump. If it has a place and you know you're going to talk about it on Tuesday at 9, your body can kind of let go of it a little bit more emotionally. So I love that. Okay, there's 7 kinds of rest. We were covering a bit of the body.
Physical.
So let's talk about the moving side of caring for your body.
Yeah, so physical rest has the 2 components, the passive, which we talked about with the sleeping. And then the active component is looking at all the different things that improve your circulation, your lymphatic drainage, your muscle flexibility, all of those types of things that actually help your body be able to heal itself. The body is kind of hotwired to want to heal itself, but most of the healing occurs when you're able to get proper circulation and drainage to and from areas. And so anything that actually helps improve that process adds to the restorative sessions. So one of the things to keep in mind is what we call body fluidity. A lot of us spend like long periods sitting at desk, or maybe you drive and have a long commute back and forth from work, or maybe you travel and you're, you know, in planes for long periods of time. But being aware that the longer your body's kind of in a stationary situation, the less of that healing process is occurring because it's not getting proper drainage or blood flow. So to do things that improve that, whether that be stretching, maybe it's just hopping up for a few moments and walking to go get some water at your fridge and coming back, but making sure that you're having some consistent opportunities to move. And, you know, it doesn't have to be kind of like this over processed thing. It doesn't have to be so regimented. When you feel your body starting to get tight, move. It's really simple. So you're sitting there, you're doing work. What most of us do is you feel the tightness in your shoulders, and we don't say it out loud, but in our head, we're thinking, shut up already, buddy. I need to finish this project.
Push through.
And we just ignore it. And we just kind of keep going. And then we wonder why at 4 o'clock it's like, you're like all tight, your shoulders are up in your ears. And you're like, why can't I look over my shoulder to, you know, move my car? Well, you kind of ignored what your body was trying to tell you for the past 8 hours. So just being really more aware of when our body is telling us it's uncomfortable.
I love it. And a lot of people are moving to standing desks. You know, they're adding the weight vests. You know, they're trying to think a little bit more ergonomically about how they're doing their work, especially if it is around a computer or you're sitting a lot. So we're getting a little more creative. But I will tell you, we say this a lot. Healthy leaders take care of their body, their mind, their heart, and spirit. And so if you're, you know, those meetings where you're sitting and you're like this and you're not wanting to move because you don't want to distract from the meeting, but if you're a healthy leader, you move, you might even stand in the meeting just so that you can care for yourself while being present. So I love that point.
The leaders in our work world are always pushing through, like you just described. And so it sounds so funny, and it is, we have to laugh about this, but we tell people, like, if you have to go to the bathroom, take time to go to the bathroom, you know, If you're hungry, go get something to eat. You know, like just do those things. Give yourself permission. Model. People are watching and model. And by the way, if you don't, you're leaking and other people are experiencing you leaking on them in terms of your needs, you know? Yeah. And so it's just great. So that's a good combination.
Well, Dr. Saunders, speak a little bit about that tension of like, if I take this break or I rest, let's talk about the bigger rests, the ones that take more time. Which ones are those in the seven?
Well, honestly, any of them could take a extended period of time, depending on the level of deficit. So one of the things we're oftentimes helping people to kind of to look at is which of these seven do you have the greatest deficit in? We created even a quiz around it. And so people go to restquiz.com, they take the assessment, they find out which type of rest they have the greatest deficit in. And then once you identify your area of greatest deficit, you can then kind of be just more intentional about where you're spending your time. So, you know, if you only have, let's say, a couple of hours within a week for your Sabbath time, if you're someone who does Sabbath, then what should you do during that time? You know, is laying on the sofa going to be the most restorative thing for you, or is talking to a friend and getting some emotional rest? And so it may, you know, the amount of time may be rather small in the big scheme of things, but it's the type of rest. Is it the actual area that needs restoration? And personally, we love it when people incorporate rest within their life. So it's not like we're just trying to find a vacation or a sabbatical or a day a week that we're going to do this, but we're finding ways of incorporating restorative processes throughout our day so that we're not actually having to find big blocks of times. We're just living a well-rested lifestyle.
Ah, so good. And people are like, is that possible? I'm like, yes, but it might take time and practice. So before we move to the next question, any more questions about the seven rests?
Oh, so far, so it's good. Unless there's anything of those other rests that you'd like to just make comment about, Dr. Saunders?
I think we covered almost all of them. I think the only two I could think of right now that we didn't mention would probably be sensory rest and creative rest.
Okay, let's speak.
Sensory rest is one a lot of people struggle with, particularly if you're in leadership and you do a lot of conferences and meetings and events like that, or even traveling, where you're around a lot of kind of background noise, or even if you work in an office space where you're hearing elevators or other conversations. When we become sensory overwhelmed, most of us have a tendency to react psychologically with either irritation, agitation, rage, or anger. So we have a lot of people who are like, why am I so aggravated, you know, and agitated at 3-4 o'clock? Or why is it every time I fly, I'm so drained? It's like I'm sitting on the plane, but I'm just drained all the time. Well, a big part of that is the sensory rest deficit. And so just being aware of the benefits of momentary sensory reprieve. So whether that's having a set of noise cancellation earphones at your desk. So, yes, you're hearing the office noise around you, but for 20 minutes you pop on noise cancellation earphones to give yourself a bit of a reset, a sensory reset, so that you're not constantly experiencing that. Some people experience this when there was the transition over into hybrid workspaces, and so you're spending a lot of time on virtual calls, and that can be a very sensory rich environment if you have more than one or two people on the virtual call, because you're looking at everybody's boxes and all the different things that are in everyone's boxes. A simple fix for that could just have everybody having the same back screen so that it looks like you're in the same situation that would be if you went to the office and everybody's in the same, you know, beige room. You can have whatever your picture or whatever the thing is you want as the backdrop so that it all stays uniform and you're not having all of the extra sensory input with that. And then with creative, it's really just being aware that the same way we use energy in all of these other areas, you use creative energy, and that needs to be restored as well. So the way to restore creative energy is allowing yourself to appreciate beauty or what's already been created so that it can inspire and kind of unlock more creativity inside of you.
I love that. You know, what's a big aha for a lot of my coaching clients, Dr. Saunders, is when I'm like, yeah, creativity doesn't happen under stress. And they're all like, oh, and so working on creating margin just to appreciate beauty, to be able to breathe in what's in creation, music, art. And then all of a sudden, when you're making margin, you're not as overstimulated or rest deprived in these various places, the creativity starts to bloom. But you'll see that in a lot of leaders' lives. You know, they start out on the go, and then eventually all the creativity is squeezed out. So I love thinking about that as a form of rest. It's really powerful. You have a work rest ratio you think is healthy. Speak to that a little bit, because in especially Western culture, we are all about productivity and, you know, maxing out every hour of the day. So what's healthy?
Yeah. So it's not a hard and fast, I should say, ratio. It's not like an 80-20 rule kind of thing. It's more of just being aware that both of them are needed. I think a lot of us get very focused on the productivity, the desire to accomplish things, the want to check things off the box. And because especially some people are just hotwired that way, that is literally how they function best when they're focused on that. I think we then have to weigh our work ethic with our rest ethic. Some people have none. They don't have a rest ethic. They rest when they die is what they tell me. And that's kind of late as an internal medicine physician because, well, is it forever? So we have to then evaluate is what is keeping us from wanting to rest? Because really, when someone gets an understanding of the value of rest, they understand that it actually drives the work. It actually allows you to be able to work at a higher capacity with greater clarity, with greater satisfaction. What you produce is not produced from your exhaustion. It's actually produced from your place of abundance. So it's a completely different level of work that's produced. When someone actually gets that revelation, you don't have to convince them to rest. Mm-hmm. They're like, to do the work, I need to rest.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we've kind of come up with this culture where it's okay to let people produce from their exhaustion. It's okay to receive the scraps of their creativity. It's okay to just let them get by with the least that they can produce. And I'm not okay with that. I think it's really just kind of a disservice to humanity as a whole.
Yeah, it is. And we actually shoot ourselves in the foot. If you're a leader that, I mean, I'm sure at different times I had expectations that were unhealthy of people I worked with or worked for me, squeezing people to the, there's nothing left is not good for them or for us or for any system that you're trying to do. So it's just becoming more aware. I'm hearing you use that word a lot. We can become more aware of what's going on inside of us. And first and foremost, we have to have good regulation there so that we could actually appropriately see what might be going on in others that we lead or around us, whether you're at home, at work, in the workplace, or in the communities you serve. In the West, I mean, you talk about the hustle culture. That's what we've got. And there's some silent killers in the workplace that you've identified and observed. What are those, and you know, how do we prevent them? You're sort of been speaking a little bit about some of that, but specifically, what are some of these silent killers in the workplace? How do we identify and prevent?
Yeah, you know what? One of the things that we're oftentimes when we get called into a company to do any type of training or well-being refresher courses or anything like that, the number one reason they're calling us in is usually because they're having a mass exodus. It's like, okay, we're losing our top talent. People are saying that they can't work in this environment. We don't know what to do. Now what do we do? So, and what we're finding is one of these kind of toxic killers in workplaces is silence. It's like people get to the end of themselves and they're not telling their leaders, and their leaders aren't actually being honest with the stressors that they already know are a part of the workplace environment. You know, oftentimes one of the things that we see is we get invited in a lot when these acquisitions and mergers happen. So if there's an acquisition happening at a company, everybody has a bit of uncertainty that they're living under. Uncertainty is a top stressor in everyone's life. So why not just have a conversation about it? Why act as if everybody's okay and everybody's not okay? And so when you're able to, as a leader, just be very vulnerable, real, raw, and authentic about emotions that you know people are already experiencing, it allows them to not feel as if you're pushing things under the rug. Because when they feel like you are hiding stuff from them, they are more likely to jump ship because they have lost trust with you. trust is built around honesty.
Yeah.
And so that is one of the silent killers that we're seeing with a lot of companies. And oftentimes when you're a leader of a company, you think, oh, I don't want them to know that this is stressful. It's like, they already know. They're stressed. People can perceive stress.
Yeah.
And so they already know that you're stressed. If you're honest with them, it then helps them to trust you through the process.
Right.
That's well said.
Yeah.
Let's think from a biblical worldview and just maybe, are there silent killers even in the church and in our, you know, generic capital C church? Because each church is different and there's some healthy systems and unhealthy. But what are those silent killers that keep even believers who the scriptures tell us to take a Sabbath, rest is for us. God even rested on the seventh day. So speak to that a little bit, Dr. Sandra.
Yeah, unfortunately, what we've found is that in the church, within the church, there's a lot of people who feel like they're exempt from the Sabbath for whatever reason. That applies to everybody else except me. So I feel like one of the things we have to realize with that is that if we look at Sabbath keeping as kind of reflecting on the life of Jesus, there are so many different examples where you see him doing these types of seven types of rest. So we see him withdrawing away, getting some sensory reprieve. We see him sleeping. We see him spending time in fellowship with other people, usually the disciples, around meals and having conversations. We see moments of affirmation and social rest where heaven spoke itself saying, you're my son and who I am well pleased. That's a sense of social rest. Someone is speaking life into you. So there's all of these examples that we see, but we've kind of get into a situation, and this isn't just the church, it's really for anyone who has a gift. Gifted people can work outside of needing like God's presence. So even if you can be a gifted preacher and show up every day and give a fantastic sermon and be completely empty as far as feeling energized and passionate and whole and really at a place of peace, because you're functioning out of your giftedness, which is the productivity part of it, and not actually functioning from a place of rest, which requires you to actually surrender some of the control. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that level of surrender is something that we struggle with just as people in general. And sometimes, when we know Jesus, it's like, oh, I surrendered once. Well, it's kind of a continuous process.
Yeah. One and done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about helping leaders to learn to love their limits. Mm-hmm. Like limits is a love word, you know? Mm-hmm. And really, I'm hearing you with everything that you've been about and what you've been doing is helping people understand you're human. And there's design in this. And the science is definitive about what humans need. Some humans can, I have people in my life, there's a few who would say that they're in the top 5% of energy, right? So there's differences amongst us in our wirings and what we bring to the table. And of course, our different bodies and how we function. All of that requires nuance and honoring of that nuance. But what are your limits? And knowing and attuning to your limits allows you to find that restorative rest in all those categories that you're describing so that you can be available. And it's amazing. Organizations and businesses, which I'm in a lot, and so are you, it seems like, you know, it's amazing how they espouse particular values. Maybe even rest is on one of those posters in the conference room, you know, and they hire people to talk to them about these things, but they, as if they live this so well. But there isn't any modeling. Talk about the power of a leader modeling these principles and what you've seen through the work that you do when leaders do this with healthy vulnerability.
Yes, it's a struggle, honestly, sometimes with working with companies the way that we do. We do a lot of training and consulting. And one of the things that is constantly having to be reiterated is the fact that, yes, I can come in, I can do a training, you know, to talk about the types of rest, but that's not going to change culture within your company. One talk does not change culture. Mm-hmm. And even if everybody in the company got it, But those who are in leadership don't get it. It still will not be effective.
Yeah.
Because they won't foster that type of relationship within the company. They won't actually bring it into the culture. So a big thing that we tend to focus a lot on is the kind of the executive level of bringing in rest. We don't start with the teams. We tend to start with like executive retreats. So we're working with all of the people who are over all the teams, get them to actually understand how to apply restorative practices within their space, within their home. So it's personally and professionally.
Yes.
When they're able to then start being able to tell how they feel better, when they have more energy, when their relationships with their kids and their spouse improve, which always improves work, because that will always drain work when your family life is horrible. So when they start seeing these improvements in their personal life and their professional life and how it's increasing their ability, that's when we actually get true teams kind of transformed, because then it's very easy for the team to come on board, because they're witnessing basically the change within the leader that's in front of them.
Yeah. It's speaking to how change happens. Is it through experiential learning versus just knowledge? So we could tell the team, this is how we do it, but without the leaders creating a culture and an experience and a buy-in. So, okay. So I want to ask, because we've got Dr. Sandra in front of us, and a neuroscience is one of my favorite things. You know, honestly, it just takes time for people to learn. And not only learn, but how to practice and not go back to the rubber band effect, right? So you can try this for a couple of weeks and the people are like right back to the old ways. So speak to a little bit of the neurobiology and how much time it takes to learn these little steps so that pretty soon all seven are a part of your life, partly to just bring grace upon grace with leaders who are living in the chaos of life right now.
Yeah, I think that's important to know, just as you mentioned, you know, I realize there's seven things, and some people are like, oh my goodness, there's seven more things I got to do. But the reality is you're likely already doing some of these things. You wouldn't be functional unless you already were naturally doing some of these things. This gives just some conversation around what it is you're doing and maybe some places that you haven't thought about. Mm-hmm. And the key to it is really starting very small. You don't have to block off a large chunk of time to begin to think, oh, now I got to do this thing to add in rest. I always like to ask people to think about a habit they're already doing. Where can you habit stack with a restorative process? You're brushing your teeth every morning like clockwork. You know, you don't think about it. It's just whoop, whoop, kind of automatic. You go into robot mode. How about habit stacking something on that has a spiritual rest component? Maybe during that time you're praying. Maybe you're listening to a devotional track. I don't know, whatever moves you. Maybe you have a picture that's on the wall or a saying or something that adds creative rest, something that inspires you. There's ways of kind of integrating some of these things in. And I feel like when we do that, that's when it becomes more natural. You're not having to always think about, oh, I need XYZ number of rest. You've built a lifestyle. And that's what I mean by living a well-rested lifestyle. You've built a lifestyle where these restorative practices are a natural part of what you do.
That's such a really important habit stacking is one of my favorite things. It's very efficient, but also from a neurobiological way, we do associate something harder with something that's already really enjoyable or a part of our rhythms. And then pretty soon it becomes pretty much a new habit that you've created over time. I habit stacked with my quiet time for a while. I would put on the fire and have a special kind of tea so that I craved the tea while I was doing it. Now I crave the Bible in that quiet space, but getting out of bed was always hard, right? So thinking a little more holistically. So I really love this conversation. I can't wait for people to get your book and to continue integrating these seven rests. What's one last word of encouragement you want to leave our listeners with today?
I would probably just say really to evaluate where you position rest. The title of my book is Sacred Rest, and that's very intentional because I started this journey giving no respect to rest. I'm a workaholic, and I'm a, We look at it from a biblical term. I'm a Martha and I'm unapologetic about it. I like work and that's not an issue with me. But I needed to recognize that work and rest both have a place. And I think that's what I would like to leave with people is just to have them evaluate where do you place rest in your process? If it's not in your process, then you're out of balance physically and spiritually, because it has to be a part of the system for you to be able to stay at a high level of producing the way that you desire.
Well, you've got the credibility for this, Dr. Sandra, both having the medical credentials that you have, but also living it and then now responding to it from a very personal place. You found yourself as the healer, the helper, if you will, as the patient, really. And so I love the fact that you're taking the good science and bringing it forward to people, both in the secular marketplace and in other places that folks might find this for Christians and non-Christians alike. We are image bearers. Our bodies tell this story, mm-hmm. and we need to have that balance in our lives in order to for things to be sustainable. And so you're leading people in that way to sustainable living. Thank you for your example and your message. Mm-hmm. And where do people find more information about you? Let's mm-hmm. point them that way. We'll have it in the show notes too, but just a quick word about that.
Yes. Yeah, so the quiz is available at restquiz.com. Very simple. And our main website is drdaltonsmith.com.
Okay.
Good to go. Yeah. Again, thank you for your time today and making time for this relational rest. And this is a little of creativity rest for me, getting to think outside the box of my normal day. So thank you. If you are enjoying this or want to pass this on to someone else, leave a review, share this episode with someone else, and continue to learn about livingwholehearted.com on our website. We have all kinds of resources, whether that's org development or individual work or professional counseling, to help you learn to find more rest in your home and in your workspaces. And pick up this book. This is a great book for this year. It's time for all of us to learn how to have rhythms of rest in our life. Sacred Rest, anywhere you buy books. Thank you for being with us today.
Hi, I'm Rhonda Began, one of the executive leadership coaches at Living Wholehearted. And I love what I do as a coach, especially in our cohort setting. That's why I'm excited to tell you that we are starting a 2-year women's executive leadership cohort in April of this year. And I don't want you to miss out. You might think as a leader, there's no way I can take 2 years to do anything. But we designed our cohort specifically to be doable for the high-level leader. Through one-on-one coaching that is easy to schedule, to once-a-month virtual group coaching, and then 4 amazing retreats at our Living Wholehearted Lodge and Retreat in beautiful Sherwood, Oregon, in the heart of wine country. We will look at who you are and how your story matters. We'll look at how you're wired and why it's important to be who you are. And then we'll look at how you have the potential to impact not just your leadership, but your family, your community, and your world. Hope you join us.